Like the show? Want to listen to episodes early? Consider becoming a patron. Starting at the $3 a month level, patrons get access to a custom patron-only feed where we put out episodes of upstairs studio podcasts like the Childcare Bar and Grill, Miss Becky's Classroom, That Early Childhood Nerd, the Renegade Rules podcast, and others early. That feed is just for patrons. You could be one of them. Go to patreon.com/playvolutionhq or click the link in the show description to learn more. Childcare Bar and Grill podcast. Jeff Johnson coming to you live from upstairs studio. Not in studio with me, sitting by the golf course, Lisa Murphy. How you doing,
Hello.
Lisa Murphy?
Hello. Nice to see you. How are you today?
I'm doing great. You know, there's been a lot of months and months now, almost, of talking about transmitting viruses and stopping transmitting viruses. I thought today we could talk about how children transmit knowledge amongst themselves, because not everything kids learn is either one from an adult or two necessarily correct, but there's a lot of sharing of information and ideas and learning going on in just kid to kid social and play interactions. And I thought it might be fun to break down that a little bit instead of talking about that damn virus.
Well, I listened to a webinar with Mark Armitage, and he was talking a lot about Iona and Peter Opie and how nursery rhymes aren't for kids and kind of the transmission of that kind of games and knowledge understanding out on the playgrounds. And apparently it started, this was new to me. I was familiar with Iona and Peter Opie, but apparently they went on a walk together and saw a ladybug, and they both like knew all the words to the you know, ladybug fly away home, ladybug, you know, your house is on fire. And they looked at each other supposedly and were like, you know, we didn't grow up together, how do we both know this? And I thought that was really kind of interesting, where you do learn stuff, how you learn stuff from the kids that you hang out with. How do you learn to, you know, no kid I don't think has ever sat down and said things like, hey, you know, come sit over here with this paper plate and let's make a paper plate cow or a paper plate fish. And, you know, but where did it come from, right? An adult maybe wanted the kid to make it. I don't know. I wanted to unpack this a little bit with you today.
Well, I mean, if I say Jingle Bells, Batman Smells.
Robin laid an egg.
I mean, yeah.
I mean, Batmobile lost his wheel and Joker ran away.
Or on top of spaghetti.
On top of spaghetti, all covered with cheese. I lost my poor meatball because somebody sneezed.
And we grew up literally thousands of miles away from each other. For our own childhoods, and we know those exactly. And there are listeners in vast and different parts of the world who know those same little rhymes, little songs. And it was pretty much child to child transmission, wasn't it?
Yeah. Versus an adult to child transmission, right? And I think that's interesting. I think listening to him gave us a pause for thought, right? To realize, have we drunk the Kool-Aid of thinking that kids are only learning about stuff if it comes from the adult? And how often are we paying attention to what the children are teaching other children? And what might that be? And if you eavesdrop on their play, especially on the playground, if you had the ability to do that, what kind of things would you hear? And would you, in fact, be taken back to your own childhood of where, like, oh, yeah, like, I learned that stuff from other kids, too,
yeah. You know? Well, my son Tyler must have been four, and it's getting close to Christmas time, and I hear him singing the Jingle Bells, Batman Smells song, which he totally didn't learn from me, but he was growing up in a early learning setting that his mother and I ran. And so he was constantly exposed to older kids. And so, of course, that's where he learned it. And he had this look of shock and surprise on his face when he heard me sing the next verse to him. I kind of interrupted him and took over the song. And he's like, you know that?
Yeah,
I know that. And then, I mean, like you said, I got to thinking about how do I know that? It's just, those things are kind of like things you always knew, it feels like, almost.
Yeah. Yeah. Or different things that might've been unique to your neighborhood, specific games or different language and things you would like, the names that you would have for certain games. But if you went three streets over, they played the same game, but they called it something different.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, in our neighborhood growing up, there was Snake Alley.
Snake Alley.
Snake Alley. Now, it was this old, I mean, this is an old neighborhood with the, you know, the city blocks and then the alleys running both directions. So the garbage trucks would have access behind the houses and that kind of stuff. But a couple blocks over, there was one of these, and because it was really hilly, there was an alley, space for an alleyway there, but it had never been paved. And maybe 100 years ago, when everything was being pulled by horses and carts, it was actually accessible. But now it was all overgrown, and I spent hours playing there. Never saw a fucking snake. But I'm assuming it was named that because sometime back in 1910, a kid was playing there and saw a snake, and so that was always Snake Alley.
Oh, I'm
and so,
sure.
So we would climb and hide and goof around there, and that's just what everybody knew it as. Now, I haven't been there for decades, and I think it'd be weird to walk up to a kid now and ask, what do you call this? But
how cool would it be if somebody was like, oh yeah, we used to call that Snake Alley, you know, when we were kids, and you're like, holy shit.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, there are people I could get a hold of on the social media right now and mention Snake Alley, and they would know exactly on the face of the earth where I was talking about.
Yeah.
I think that's delightful that we have these things. I'm wondering what the implications are for how we engage with children and quote unquote teach them, when we know that there's this level of learning and sharing going on, what is it, below the radar, kind of? I mean,
I
unless we
say
stop
that.
To think about it.
I think if we realize that, and this is a little Vygotsky-esque, is that, you know, children are teaching each other things all day long, right? Learning is happening whether or not an adult is present at all. So I think simply by broadening our mindset and our understanding to realize that it's not just about us, like if we're able to make room for whatever that kind of learning might be, it might not be learning that gets tested, but it is learning that I think it's like a social currency kind of learning. You know, do you know the rules to that game? Are you new and somebody needs to teach you the quote unquote rules of the playground? He was talking about how nursery rhymes and fairy tales are often taught to children, but there's similar chanting games that happen that no adult ever taught the child. You know, it's like the playground is so ripe for language development and social interactions, and I just don't know if we're making time for that anymore.
Well, I mean, it's like,
or seeing value in it.
Like, what is it, Miss Mary Mack?
Yeah, like that kind of stuff.
That kind of stuff. Yeah. It's this almost, or maybe it is exactly this oral tradition,
mm-hmm.
of cultural assimilation that children
of childhood
kind of, yeah. Well, I mean,
right.
Yeah.
No teacher ever taught me Miss Mary Mac, right? No teacher taught me those jump rope songs.
Yeah, but, they might have known them, but that wasn't how we were learning them out in the playground. And so I think in our environments, we should just maybe try to tune in a little bit to how that stuff is transmitted around the program. It's almost as if this cultural assimilation is going on in our classrooms. A new child comes in and they kind of learn the subtext of how things are done here. From
the real way, often I think the real way, right, that things are done, at least
Yeah. Yeah. So and I like to, I there's a couple sessions I do where we talk about fantasy and imaginative play. And I really think most early learning programs that have been around for a while also have their own kind of myths and stories about things. I mean, in our family program, I had the children convinced we had a baby Triceratops living in the basement. I've heard programs, you know, they had the steam heat, and so during the winter the pipes would make noise, and they would talk about how that was the dwarfs or the dragon living in the wall and things like that. And so kids would share those stories, and maybe the adult told that story once 10 years ago, and then the kids told that story over and over again. My baby
dinosaur.
Because
it meant something, right? Because they won't keep the story going if it isn't having some kind of impact or some purpose for the kid, right? Otherwise, it would be something that came in and they dismiss it, but it held value to them for some reason.
Yeah.
So they keep it and then they pass that along.
Yeah, so our dinosaur, I invented the story to stop kids from dropping stuff down the laundry chute. In the coat closet, I told them, you know, we found a dinosaur egg. Tasha sat on it. The egg hatched. We got a dinosaur in the basement. They're like, okay. And and I need you to stop dropping stuff down the chute because she's going to chew on it and your stuff will get ruined. And then it stopped after one girl tested it, Anna. Anna is 19 now. But the thing is, Anna's baby sister was an infant the first time I told the story. And 2 years later, after the only way the story is transmitted is through the kids, she's opening the door to the laundry chute in the little kids' closet, and she's yelling down there, "Dinosaur, when I grow up, I can come and see you," because we told them, you know, you got to be a grown up before you can see the dinosaur, and that was totally transmission from kid to kid over years, and it went on until kids who were not born or in our program, which I mean, you couldn't be in the program, I guess, if you weren't born, years and years later knew not to drop stuff down the laundry chute because a dinosaur is going to eat it.
I was actually just reading an article where they were talking specifically about certain cultures that they were attributing the fact that they didn't raise their voice and get angry, quote unquote, with the children because there was a theme ongoing using stories just like that to control certain behaviors, certain unwanted behavior, that it was never getting mad and telling you, don't do that, that makes me mad, but the story was woven throughout and just how that has kept going generation to generation. And I found that quite interesting.
Yeah, every once in a while I talk about this in presentations and somebody scolds me, probably named Karen, who somebody scolds me about, well, that's lying to the children and manipulating them. Well, yeah, maybe if you want that spin on it,
yeah, but
you're a jerk and we manipulate people all the time. So,
well, I mean, and to that, and I know we occasionally, and although we shouldn't announce this, I know occasionally children listen, but there are lies that we tell children on a regular basis that are socially acceptable.
Yeah. Well, and that aren't, like, stop spinning. You're going to fall down.
Or your eyes are going to stay crossed. If you keep crossing your eyes,
yeah,
put your arm
exactly
out the window when we're driving, it's going to fly off.
Yeah. So let's talk about the naughty side of the social transmission.
Well, Brian Sutton Smith and there's a whole bunch of play theorists who spent like their entire careers cataloging like body rhymes, and it's like the playground was a pub after hours, you know, and the language and the taunting and the teasing and the swearing and the naughty words. I mean, there's an entire discipline under the study and research of play about that.
Yeah, and I think it's
just that it exists might be blowing away the mind of a couple of our listeners. I mean, could you imagine spending your career, like, what do you research? naughty language on the playground shared by, you know, third graders?
Yeah, I mean, did you learn about sex from health class or a parent, or did you learn... And I'm not saying learn correctly, but learn first from peers and
slightly older kids, and walking home, because I first started going to public school and we walked there, and there'd be the huge gaggle of kids, you know, that would be walking all mixed ages. I mean, I learned a lot of stuff walking to and from. I learned more probably walking to and from school than I learned those years at school. Seriously.
Yeah, and I mean, granted, a hunk of it is probably stuff that you needed to relearn at some point, but thinking about it, just here as we've been talking about this, I got a lot of fairly accurate information that has served me pretty well for the last, I don't know, 40, 45 years. I mean,
we didn't have that kind of talk. And if we did, it was not happening around me, or I was still young and naive enough. I mean, I only had that walking to school experience for kindergarten, first and second grade. I think I learned more of like how to navigate socially. So again, it was correct,
yeah,
but it was correct for that situation. Like who to talk to, who not to talk, like don't walk up to that house because they'll scream at you. You know, like I learned that kind of stuff. You know, that
that
the lunch ladies will actually tell on you if you decide to have a blood, we wanted to be blood sisters. So we snuck a needle in and we, you know, poked our fingers and rubbed it all together so we would be blood sisters. And Much simpler times. Could you imagine that? You know, who you could trade shoes with, and you would get to school, like you'd wear shoes and then you'd swap shoes and then you got to wear her cool shoes the rest of the day. But then there were other people you didn't ask if that was okay. Yeah. I learned that stuff.
Well, I walked to school from like kindergarten up through eighth grade most of the time. So I guess I had a lot more opportunity to learn stuff on the streets.
Yeah, I didn't. Then I went to Catholic school and we got driven in a carpool. Now, I still learned shit in the back of the carpool, but not as much, you know, as you might have, because I mean, the adult clearly is sitting right there.
Yeah.
You know, it was more.
Yeah, but I mean, there's a lot of information transmitted in those situations with whispers and glances and, mm-hmm. and pointing and notes. So
Notes, absolutely.
But yeah. And so I think,
We need to acknowledge that, and I think most of our listeners probably have drank this Kool-Aid, that there is room for child-to-child transmission, teaching, learning, understanding, that it's not always the job of the adult.
Yeah, and I think overall, what is transmitted is probably net positive.
Correct.
And we could probably do a better job of creating spaces and opportunities for children to engage in that kind of play, communication, social interaction.
And the importance of, or the consistent, the consistent factor is that it requires other children, right? Kids have to be around other children for those transmissions to actually happen. Preferably in mixed age groups. That's my bias.
Yeah. So what's the formula there? Mixed age groups of children plus time equals social transmission of information.
Yeah. Yeah. That an adult might not find acceptable, but it's still very much important.
Yeah.
I think in the culture of childhood.
And so let's talk about that for a moment, because I think it's important to realize that just because we as the adults don't find it quote unquote appropriate doesn't mean it doesn't have value.
Exactly, 100%. And just because we don't see it happening doesn't mean that it's not happening.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, really what we could do better is mixed age groups, time, and wearing earplugs? I don't know.
Oh, I don't think you need earplugs. I think you just need to
just
not
need
always
to stay out of the way. Need to stay out of the way.
Yeah.
So I mean, we could stop hovering a little bit.
I would agree 100%. I'm looking at my note here really quick because it looks like I wrote something down that I'm wanting to read out loud, but I'm trying to read it first. the games whose decline is the most powerful are those best known by the adults. Mark Armitage was talking about how adults will often lament what we don't see, especially with playground games, chance, and things like that. Therefore, we think that it's not happening anymore when in actuality it is happening still, but we don't see what's familiar to us. So we then jump to the conclusion that it's not happening at all, which is incorrect.
Yeah. And I mean, we're living in a a much different world than we were kids. So there are fewer kids walking to school, but there are more kids messaging each other on social media. And exactly. So that stuff is probably getting transmitted and shared in those different venues. And so, I mean, my old guy bias, for a lot of reasons, I would like to see more kids walking to school for the transmission of information like this, for one reason. But I would be cool if they were walking to school and still texting the information and having those discussions while they walked, because then they'd be walking. But I'm totally cool with the fact that even though it's not going on the way it did when we were young, it's still going on in these other venues.
He said the belief that traditional games are dying is in itself traditional. I like that a lot.
You just imagine the old guy when kids never run down the street spinning hoops with a stick anymore.
Yeah. No, but they're on a skateboard, or they're on a bike,
they're hoverboard.
Yeah, right.
So I think this is great. Oh man, we could do a whole nother episode about how caregivers do this same thing via social media and chat. I just thought of this whole podcast is based on the idea that trying to model in an auditory format that informal discussion and learning that took place in hotel bars after conferences. So there's a lot of that going on, a lot of adult learning going on in this profession that's not happening in informal learning settings. And I think that's maybe not a direct relationship, but I think there's some connections there.
You know, while you were talking, the word practice came to my head. Like in those after hour conversations, maybe you could practice playing with a new idea or a new thought or a new aha or a new understanding, which would be perhaps a softer, gentler place to try something new and get some feedback. And I think kids do that, you know, they try it out. And sometimes the older kid is like, duh-uh. And then sometimes, you know what I'm saying? It's safer to try it out. You know?
Because it is so much relationship based, and there's got to be that comfort zone before you open yourself up to accepting new ideas, and that kind of informal setting is more conducive to that, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. A little bit more comfortable. Not as it's risky still maybe to share it because it might not be popular, or you don't want to look stupid, or it's already been disproven and you just didn't read that paper yet and you don't know. So I think there's still an inherent risk with tossing out ideas, but it's still on the risk scale. It's a safer risk than getting up in front of a room of 500 people and tossing out a new idea and, you know, managing and navigating the feedback from seven peers. 100% different than 500.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, any more on this one before we wrap
no,
it up?
No, I don't know. What are we going to call this one? I don't know. That's your department.
I wrote some notes. We'll figure something out. This has been the Child Care Bar and Grill podcast. We will be back soon with another episode. You need more Lisa Murphy in your life? Go to ooeygooey.com. You need more me in your life? You can go to playvolutionhq.com, where we're creating and curating early learning content, including this podcast episode. We'll be back soon. Share the show with a friend or an enemy, because we don't really care who you share it with. We just appreciate you sharing. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. An enemy.
This has been an Explorations Early Learning Upstairs Studio production.